Okay, welcome to the Shiur in Sfarno Parshas Bereishis, third installment this week. Wanted to speak about tonight the Sfarno's approach to the story of the Eitz Hadas and the failure of man, the Chet Eitz Hadas, the sin that took place with the eating from the Eitz Hadas. So first I want to start off with the Sfarno in Perek Beis Pasuk Tes, where it describes what the Eitz Hadas actually was. There we find that the Pasuk says that Ve'Eitz HaChayim B'Soch HaGan, HaKadosh Baruch Hu caused various trees to grow in the midst of Gan Eden. The Eitz HaChayim, the tree of life, is in the middle of the garden. Ve'Eitz Hadas Tov Vareh, and literally the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And of course we know that most of the story focuses on the Eitz Hadas Tov V'Rah. The Eitz HaChayim kind of drops out of the story a little bit and just comes back at the very, very end. So we'll talk a little bit about the Eitz HaChayim in a few moments. What was the Eitz Hadas? So the Sfarno writes, Masi Losei Slev El Hatov V'Hora. The nature of the Eitz Hadas is that it enticed a person to pay attention to good and evil. Now, what is good and evil? So let me skip a few lines in the Sfarno. The Sfarno says that Tov Vara means Livchor Ha'orev Afal Pisha Yazik. The focus on picking a choice which is pleasant and sweet in the short run, even if it's harmful in the long run. Vilim Os Habilti Orev Afal Pisha Yo'il. And to reject something which is not sweet, even if it's something which is positive and helpful. We mentioned earlier this week that the Sfarno tends not to quote earlier sources, even when what he's saying is based on earlier sources. And here's a good example of that phenomena. The Sfarno over here is essentially presenting a view of the Eitz Hadas Tov V'Ra that's based on the Rambam in the very beginning of Mor Nevuchim. In the very second chapter of Mor Nevuchim, the Rambam asks the following kasha. We know that what makes man special and unique is that he's given bechira chofshis, he's given free will, and he's given understanding to know the difference between something which is morally correct and morally incorrect. As opposed to an animal that just acts on instinct, man makes decisions based on what's correct and what's incorrect. You know, he has an understanding of what's proper, what's moral, what's ethical, and conversely, what's sinful, what's immoral, what's unethical. As such, asked the Rambam, how do you understand the whole existence of the Eitz Hadas? A simple reading of the Chumash seems to present that man was originally created without moral understanding. He originally did not know good from evil. It's this tree from whose fruit he ate that brought man to realize the difference between good and evil. And the Ribbono Shel Olam didn't want him eating from that tree, and in fact punished him when he ate from that tree. So the implication of the simple pshat in Chumash, says the Rambam, is that it was not desirable for man to know the difference between good and bad, and it was sinful and a less than desirable result when man actually did acquire the knowledge to know the difference between what's good and what's bad, what's right and what's wrong. That's very perplexing. How can we imagine such a thing would be? So the Rambam goes on in Mor Nevuchim to redefine the terms tov v'ra in this context. Tov and ra, good and evil, don't mean moral and immoral, ethical and unethical, right and wrong. But tov means pleasurable, and ra means non-pleasurable. And as such, the Rambam writes as follows. Originally, when man was created, he was an incredibly intellectual person. Man understood that sometimes the things that are right are not necessarily pleasurable, and the things that are pleasurable are not necessarily right. That was man before the sin. When eating from the Eitz Hadas Tov V'Rah, man all of a sudden began to make his decisions not based on right and wrong, but instead based on pleasurable and non-pleasurable. The Eitz Hadas Tov Ara, instead of giving man a moral sense, confused man's moral sense such that his decisions were not based on morality, on ethics. His decisions were made based on what feels good or doesn't feel good. That's the Rambam writes. That's how we have to understand the whole parsha of the Eitz Hadas Tov Ara. The Sfarno, without quoting the Rambam directly, is certainly working with that position of the Rambam. It's clear that the Sfarno was familiar with this passage in the Rambam in Mor Nevuchim, familiar with all the Mor Nevuchim. And that's what the Sfarno is saying, that Tov in this context means choosing that which is pleasurable, even though it's harmful. Right? Just to take a simple example. I can eat sugary foods, and they taste good, but I know that when I go to the doctor's not going to be happy that I had all those sugary foods. And ra, evil, doesn't mean immoral. It means non-pleasurable. But sometimes the non-pleasurable thing is the thing that's really good for me. Not everybody likes vegetables, but they don't necessarily taste good. They don't necessarily taste sweet. But they're certainly better for me than the sugary treats that otherwise I would have. So, before eating from the Eitz Hadas, man naturally would have gravitated towards the vegetables, as opposed to gravitating towards the sugar. After eating from the Eitz Hadas Tov Ara, man all of a sudden is attracted to the sugar, even though the vegetables, objectively speaking, are really better for him. So that idea is really from the Rambam. What the Sfarno does is he goes one step further and he says that the word da'as also has to be understood a little bit differently than the way it's normally understood. Da'as is usually interpreted as knowledge. And it's that interpretation that leads us to the question that the Rambam had posed. I thought knowledge is a good thing. You're telling me that the Ribbono Shel Olam didn't want man having a certain kind of knowledge? Kadosh Baruch Hu wanted man to remain ignorant? How could that be? How could da'as ever be a bad thing? So that's the Sfarno interprets the word da'as differently. Da'as doesn't mean knowledge in the intellectual sense. Da'as means paying attention to something. The Eitz Hadas Tov Ara, according to the Sfarno, translates as the tree that makes one pay attention to whether things are pleasurable or not pleasurable. That's Eitz Hadas Tov Ara. Where do you get that interpretation? So he quotes a few examples where da'as means to pay attention to someone. The beginning of Perek Dalet, we're going to read about Veha'odom Yoda is Chavo Ishto. Odom, the way it's usually translated, was intimate with his wife Chava. They had marital relations together. So the reason that the word Yediya, knowledge, is used in that context is because it means he paid attention to her. Adam gave an incredible amount of attention to Chava, i.e., they had marital relations together, and you know that's what the Pasuk is describing. Or, in Megillas Rus, it describes how Naomi had a moda le'isha, had a relative to her late husband, to Elimelech. That was Boaz. Boaz was a relative of Elimelech. Why is a relative called a moda from that same root? Shadarko lase slave litzarche krovo. Because a relative typically will pay attention to the needs of his relative. And that's certainly the context in which the phrase is used in Megillas Rus. Naomi says to Rus, go to Boaz, he's our relative. He'll pay attention to you. He'll take care of your needs. So we see that the word yediyah, da'as, is associated with the concept of paying attention to something. Hence, Eitz Hadas Tov Ara, the tree that causes one to focus on the pleasurable as opposed to focusing on the moral and the ethical. That's the interpretation of the Sfarno in the Pasuk based on the Rambam. With that, let's turn our attention then to the Sfarno. In the beginning of Perek Gimel, the beginning of Perek Gimel describes, introduces us to the Nachash, to the snake. V'Nachash haya oru mikol chayas hasode. The snake was the most cunning of all of the beasts of the field. And of course, we grow up with this imagery of, you know, this tempting snake going over to Chava, convincing her to eat from the fruit of the Eitz Hadas. And, you know, the snake is the quintessential bad guy, you know, in the whole story. Comes the Sfarno, and he has a totally different interpretation of this snake. It's not the snake at all. Says the Sfarno, it's not a snake in the sense in which we usually understand it. Hu Satan, hu Yetzer Hara. It's not a snake at all, says the Sfarno. The snake, quote unquote, is actually a term which is used metaphorically in describing the Yetzer Hara, in describing the evil inclination within. And the Sfarno, we're going to see, interprets the whole conversation between the Nachash and Chava as essentially Chava's Yetzer Hara, her evil inclination, talking to her. Why is the Yetzer Hara described as a snake? Because he says it's Rav HaHezek. Like a snake, it causes an incredible amount of damage. Imiyut Heyoso Nira. And it's not all that visible. If you get attacked by a lion, by a tiger, by a bear, you know, the animal that's attacking you is quite readily visible. But a snake slithers in the grass, and very often you won't even realize that it's there until it's too late. That, says the Sfarno, is the most beautiful metaphor, unfortunately, for the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara can entice you and can pounce upon you, and you don't even necessarily realize that it's there. And it's not surprising that the Yetzer Hara, he says, should be referred to as a Nachash. Ki omnom yikare hadover b'shem ezedomelo, because we very often use a term metaphorically to describe something similar to it. Kemo shenikra hamelech aryeh, ka'omro olo aryeh misubicho. The pasuk in Yirmiyahu, in describing how Nebuchadnezzar has left Bavel and is going to come and conquer Eretz Yisrael, describes how the lion has left its lair. Now, Nebuchadnezzar is not literally a lion, but the term lion is used metaphorically to describe a king. So if you can describe a king as a lion, you can describe the Yetzer Hara as a nachash. V'yikar ho'ayvim hamazikim nachashim tzif'onim. And in another citation from Yahu, this was the Haftarah, which we read on Tisha B'Av morning, the Navi describes how the Ribbono Shel Olam is going to send enemies against the Jewish people in Yerushalayim. Who are these enemies? Nechashim Tzif'onim, poisonous snakes. Now again, the Babylonians are not literally poisonous snakes, but the term is being used metaphorically. So if you can use that, so that's why our pasuk is describing the Yetzer Hara as a nachash, as a snake. It's not actually a snake. In our minds, if we were to be dropped into Gan Eden and watch the scene unfold, it wasn't the nach. There's no snake that's actually speaking to Chava. The way the Sfarno understands, the pasuk is telling us that Chava's Yetzer Hara was speaking to her internally. Ukvar amru zichronom livrocha shahoyo samoyel roche valov. In the Pirkei Rebbe Elazar, the oldest medrash that we have, it describes how Samoel, how the Satan, was riding on this nachash, was riding on this snake. Says the Sfarno, that's meant metaphorically as well. That's the way of Chazal saying that the nachash is in fact not a snake, but rather the Yetzer Hara. What Chazal are trying to describe over there by saying that Samoel was riding on top of the Nachash was to describe a little bit of how the Yetzer Hara works. How does sin work? How does the Yetzer Hara convince a person to violate the Ratzon Hashem, the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So he says it's a combination of two different kochos, two different forces that a person has within his body. There's the koach hamisave, the desires that a person has, and the koach hamidame, the imagination that a person has. Imagination and desire work together to get a person to sin. How so? Hamovil elav dimyoni hatanugim achomriyim. The way a person sins is that he imagines that if he commits this sin, he's going to have pleasure beyond anything that he could possibly think about. Now, we call that imagination because it's very often imaginary, meaning the person very often after he commits the sin says to himself, you know, that wasn't so amazing, that wasn't so great. But he built it up in his mind. He imagined that he was going to have a tremendous positive experience from engaging in this sin. So the imagination plus the desire work together. If the person had a desire, but he didn't have the imagination, if he were to think to himself, you know, I'd really like to do that Aveira, but frankly, after I do that Aveira, I can't imagine that it's going to be so amazing. I can't imagine I'm going to get so much pleasure out of it. You know, it'll be limited pleasure. He very likely wouldn't follow through with it. It's because he has this imagination, this chalom, this dream, that somehow he's going to be very fulfilled by engaging in this Aveira. That's what leads him to do, you know, this particular Aveira. When you put together imagination and desire, that speaks to his sinful nature, and they cause a person to falsify and to go against what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. And that's what the pasuk says, "Velo sosuru achare levavchem v'achare einechem." You should not follow your hearts or your eyes. In other words, the heart is the seat of imagination. The eye is the seat of desire. It's imagination plus desire that brings about the chet. So the Sfarno very, very uniquely describes the nachash as being a metaphor. It's a metaphor for the Yetzer Hara. So then how do you continue reading the pasuk? V'hanachash hayo'aru mikol chayas hasodeh. The snake was the most cunning of all of the beasts of the field. But there's no snake. We're just talking about the Yetzer Hara. So what are you talking about the snake relative to the rest of the animals? So comes the Sfarno with a fascinating pshat. He says as follows. Hakoach hadimyoni hamovil tmunos hata'anugim el hakoach hamisave. That power of imagination, which again, as the Sfarno has said, is essential to a person committing a sin, Hayachazok bohem yoser mimashahoya bishar balayachayim. The power of imagination within man is more powerful than the power of imagination within any other creature. Right? Man can imagine all kinds of incredible things. Now, the truth is that's one of the positive aspects of a human being, that they can imagine things that don't exist at all. There's a power of creativity, a power of imagination, the power to envision, you know, things that currently don't exist. You know, monkeys don't have that, dolphins don't have that, the gorillas don't have it. Man has that power of imagination. But that very power of imagination, which is so productive and which allows man to create so many things in this world, can also potentially be his downfall. It can lead to his Yetzer Hara overpowering him, because as we've already explained, says the Sfarno, the power of the imagination is a critical ingredient in the power of the Yetzer Hara. But wait a minute, what's the Sfarno saying over here? The Sfarno is talking about how man is superior in terms of his imagination to all of the other creatures. But that's not what the Pasuk is talking about. The Pasuk is talking about the snake. The nachash haya aru mikol chayas hasode. So apparently the way the Sfarno is interpreting the pasuk is as follows. Rabbi Cooperman in his notes stresses this point. The snake, i.e. the Yetzer Hara, haya arum, was more powerful and cunning within man, mi bechol chayas hasode, more so than the Yetzirah exists within any other creature. In other words, what the Pasuk is saying, that there's something which is superior, there's some kind of creature which has a quality that no other creature has, the simple pshat is comparing the nachash, the snake, to other animals. But in the hands of the Sfarno, what the Pasuk is doing is comparing human beings to other creatures. The power of imagination, i.e. the nachash within, is more powerful within man than it is within any other creature. No other creature has this power of imagination on the level that man does, and hence, no other creature has a yetzer hara as powerful as a man does, as a human being does. And the Sfarno in this vein cites the famous Maimer Chazal, Sukkah Daf Nun Beis Amud Aleph, Ka'amram kol ha-gado me-chaveiro yitzro gado mimenu. Chazal say the greater a person is, the greater his yetzer hara is. Why is that? Why is it that we read stories in the Gemara about Tanoim, holy individuals who were faced with tremendous challenges and, you know, barely were able to overcome them? So the Gemara says, kol ha-gado me-chaveiro yitzro gado mimenu. If you're greater, the greater you are, the greater your yetzer hara is. Why should that be? So here the Sfarno is telling us, what did Chazal mean by that? Because apparently, greatness is a function of creativity. The more imagination you have, the more creativity you have, the more you can envision things, the greater person you're going to be. But hand in hand with that creativity, hand in hand with that vision, hand in hand with that imagination, goes the greater potential for the yetzer hara to be active. So it's a double-edged sword. The very creativity and vision and imagination which can propel a person to godliness, to greatness, can also ignite the yetzer hara in a way which can be deadly. So that's this nachash. Again, a fascinating interpretation from the Sfarno. But let's see more. The nachash, i.e. the yetzer hara, goes to Chava, and he says to her, you know why the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't want you eating from the Eitz Hadas Tova Ra? Because ki yodeya Elokim ki biyom achochem imenu v'nifkichu einechem. Hashem knows that on the day on which you eat from this tree, your eyes will be opened up. Perigimu pasukei. So explains the Sfarno. Lo osar oso apri b'nei chashash miso klal. What the Nachash, i.e. the Yetzer Hara, is telling Chava as follows. Hashem isn't prohibiting you from eating the fruit because he's afraid that you'll die, which is what you thought he meant. No. Elo mipnei shehu yodeya shetasigu b'achiloso tosefes yediyo. Kodesh Baruch Hu knows that when you eat from this fruit, you're going to gain something, some knowledge, some understanding that you didn't have before. Rabbi Cooperman in his notes points out something very interesting in the Sfarno. Why is it, indeed, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want Adam and Chava to eat from the Eitz Hadas? We know what the Nachash said. The Nachash said to them, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, is afraid that you'll gain something that you didn't have before. Okay, but that was wrong. That was erroneous. But in point of fact, why was it that they weren't allowed to eat from the Eitz Hadas? You know, was it just a Gzeiras HaKosov? Was it just a command from HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Was there some kind of reason behind it? So the Sfarno implies that the Ribbono Shel Olam was looking out for the best interests of Adam and Chava. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Adam, ki biyom achochem imenu mos tomus, don't eat from the Eitz Hadas, because on the day on which you eat from it, you'll die, he wasn't suggesting a punishment. Hashem was describing what would be the result of eating from the Eitz Hadas. Because what's the Eitz Hadas? Again, let's go back to the Sfarno's definition. The Eitz Hadas is a tree which causes man to look at the world differently. Instead of looking at the world through the prism of what's right and what's wrong, the Eitz Hadas causes man to look at the world through the prism of what's pleasurable and what's not pleasurable. When a person goes through life, or when human beings begin to look at the world as divided between pleasurable and not pleasurable, that itself is a death sentence. That changes the very nature of humanity. Humanity is no longer the spiritual, intellectual race that is concerned exclusively with what's right and what's wrong. Now all of a sudden, human beings just want to, you know, have pleasure. So a life that's dedicated to pleasure is a life that's not eternal, is a life that's mortal, that's going to come to an end at some point. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Adam and Chava. This tree can change the way you function and operate, but it will come with a great price. It will come with the price of mortality. You'll start looking at the world in terms of pleasure, and then it's going to be all downhill from there. That's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't want them eating from the Eitz Hadas. And that explains as well the role of the Eitz HaChayim. If you go back to Perek Beis, Pasuk Yud Zayin, it describes over there how from the Eitz Hadas, which the Eitz Hadas is in the garden, Korov le'Eitz HaChayim. The Eitz Hadas is right next to the tree of life. Al derech hachayim v'hamoves nosati lefonecha. As the Pasuk says later on at the end of Chumash, I have placed life and death in front of you. What the Svarno seems to be saying in this very brief comment is the following idea. The Eitz Hadas and the Eitz HaChayim are actually opposites. Usually when we read the Psukim, we think the Eitz Hadas had one role, the Eitz HaChayim had a separate role, the Eitz Hadas did whatever it did, the Eitz HaChayim caused the person to live forever. And there was no real connection between the two trees. They're just, okay, they're two magical trees that happen to be in the middle of the garden. The Svarno seems to be saying very much not like that. The Eitz HaChayim and the Eitz Hadas are the equivalent of HaChayim v'hamoves nosati lefonecha. They are life and death. The Eitz HaChayim causes man to focus on that which is eternal. And the truth is, since man was created already with a focus on the spiritual, on the eternal, the Eitz HaChayim wasn't really relevant to him in the beginning. The Eitz Hadas causes man to focus on that which is materialistic and fleeting, on pleasure and the lack of pleasure. It's the opposite. It's the mirror image of the Eitz HaChayim. That's why they're both together in the middle of the garden, says the Svarno, because HaChayim v'hamoves nosati lufonecho. I've placed before you life and death. Life is the Eitz HaChayim. Death is the Eitz Hadas. And that's why it causes death, because it causes one to look at the world in a skewed way, in a non-spiritual way, in a way which is focused on pleasurable and non-pleasurable in that kind of way. So ultimately we know that man, Adam and Chava, make the wrong choice. They choose to eat from the Eitz Hadas, and they begin to look at the world in this inappropriate way, looking at it in terms of pleasure and the lack of pleasure, as opposed to that which is going to be eternal. At the very end of the story, the Ribbono Shel Olam says, I'm afraid, I have to send them out of Gan Eden, lest they eat from the Eitz HaChayim. So what does that mean? What are we concerned that they'll be what is HaKadosh Baruch Hu concerned that they're going to eat from the Eitz HaChayim? So writes the Svarno, Perek Gimel, Pasuk Chav Beis, now that man has been transformed for bad, and he looks at the world in terms of pleasurable and not pleasurable, if he eats from the Eitz HaChayim, he will become eternal, and yirdof kol hayomim achar ha'arev, he will spend his life chasing after that which is pleasurable alone. And we can't have that. To have man be both eternal and concerned with pleasure would create a human race that would never achieve the spiritual things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants them to achieve. The only way to get them to achieve that is to make man mortal. And to say, you have a finite number of days on this earth, spend them in the pursuit of things that are spiritual, not in the pursuit of pleasure. So again, we've seen in a few short comments, the Svarno has radically changed the way we look at this whole story of the Eitz Hadas. As we continue next week, Be'ezus Hashem, we'll see more incredible insights, pithy, short, incredible insights, but changing, transformative insights that the Svarna will share with us. Rabbi Chanan ben Akasha Omer, Ratza HaKadosh Baruch Hu Lezakos Es Yisrael, Lefikach Hirbo Lahem, Torah